Hi, this is Willie Nelson from Normal. For 30 years, Normal has provided a voice for the millions of Americans who smoke marijuana responsibly. More than 500,000 Americans are arrested each year for smoking pot. These are ordinary citizens like you and me whose lives and careers are being needlessly destroyed. To learn how you can help, contact Normal at www.norml.org or call toll-free at 888-67-NORML.
Distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. This is your daily audio stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Welcome to the most popular audio podcast regarding marijuana in all of America and all the world, featuring interviews with scientists, politicians, doctors, prohibition policy activists, regular cannabis consumers, musicians, and Normal staff and Normal's board of directors, along with music and comedy no other podcast can offer. You can always find out more about the show at our website, normalaudiostash.com. We're ending marijuana prohibition with education, one listener at a time. Welcome back to the Audio Stash. Today, I'm your host, Chris Goldstein. Take a moment to join us at Normal to end marijuana prohibition in America. Just visit norml.org. We have a great show for you today. First, we'll have news, then event audio from the 2006 Normal Conference in San Francisco. Joan Madonna did graduate research work on the difference between marijuana here in the United States and how we treat it, and that in Europe. Also today, after that event audio, we got some great pod-safe music for you today, as well as some comedy from a group called the Killer Kona Buds, all here on Normal's Daily Audio Stash today. First today, it's news from Normal. Endocannabinoid research points to possible Parkinson's disease treatment. Endocannabinoids, naturally occurring compounds produced by the human body that are similar to those found in marijuana, may point to a treatment for Parkinson's disease. In a study published today in the journal Nature, researchers from the Stanford University School of Medicine report that stimulation of the endocannabinoid system helped trigger a dramatic improvement in mice with a condition similar to Parkinson's. The Stanford research team combined a drug already used to treat Parkinson's disease with an experimental compound that can boost the level of endocannabinoids in the brain. When they used the combination in mice with a condition like Parkinson's, the results were striking, with paralyzed mice moving freely within 15 minutes. Current treatment for Parkinson's includes drugs that stimulate or mimic dopamine. When dopamine is depleted, it is thought that the pathway responsible for inhibiting movement becomes overly activated, leading to the difficulty of initiating motion, the hallmark of Parkinson's disease. But those drugs alone usually have little effect on animals or humans. Based on prior knowledge of endocannabinoids and dopamine, the researchers speculated that the two chemicals were working in concert to keep the inhibitory pathway in check. When they added a drug that slows the enzymatic breakdown of endocannabinoids in the brain, called URB-597, the dramatic results were attained. The researchers speculated that these new developments might lead to a therapy for humans. According to the National Parkinson Foundation, the condition affects 1.5 million Americans. Quote, "This study points to a potentially new kind of therapy for Parkinson's disease," close quote, said senior author Robert Malenka, MD, PhD, and the Nancy Friend Pritzker Professor of Psychiatry and Behavioral Sciences at Stanford. He continued, quote, "Of course, it is a long, long way to go before this will be tested in humans, but nonetheless, we have identified a new way of potentially manipulating the circuits that are malfunctioning in this disease," close quote. In December, a German scientific review published in the journal Current Medicinal Chemistry indicated that cannabis-based medicines could offer therapeutic relief for symptoms of Parkinson's disease and may also moderate the course of the illness. Authors stated that in the report, quote, "Cannabinoids are antioxidant, inhibit glutamate toxicity, and they also possess anti-inflammatory properties," close quote. The authors continued, quote, "Altogether, we can conclude that cannabinoid-based medicines could be neuroprotective in the course of the disease, whereas individual compounds might modulate the behavioral effects of Parkinson's disease motor symptoms themselves," close quote. Links to the German review and the new research from Stanford are available on our website at normalaudiostash.com. Next up on the Audio Stash today, some event audio today. It's important to highlight all of the different work and research that happens on cannabis and its effects on society, as well as that of its effects on our body. In our next event audio segment, we'll hear graduate research student Joan Madonna.
Hi there. So I am not a patient. I'm just a pot smoker. I've known about pot since I was a little girl. I grew up in Oklahoma. My mother smoked pot. I always thought she was really weird. So I come from the outside. I'm a cultural geographer, and so I did analysis of the landscapes of cannabis in Amsterdam compared to what's happening in the Bay Area. And as you can see, I claim that they're hiding in plain view. I've been in San Francisco for 12 years, and I saw the first dispensary in 96, 97. I was so happy. Yay, they're selling pot to people that need it because they're sick. The last couple of years, they proliferated. There's so many in San Francisco, and I'm like, why are they hiding? They're legal. Everyone should know they're there. I can tell they're there. The smell, the codes, the green, the pot leaves, I can tell they're there. I think everyone should be able to see that they're there. So as a cultural geographer, I believe that the landscape is both a representation of our culture, and it is also a process of social reproduction. Landscape is not static nor benign. We do not only read the landscape, but we listen to what it says about the culture that produced it, and it makes an impression upon the viewer. We all know that taboo of cannabis in the United States is socially constructed, though it is not just by governmental manipulation. Taboos are reproduced by specific practices in the landscape, but they are constantly evolving, flowing, and changes are often spawned by forces and advocacy from below. The manner in which cannabis clubs represent themselves has a powerful effect on society. At UC Berkeley, my research project compared the established, co-evolved, visible coffee shops of Amsterdam to the emerging and often hidden in plain view cannabis clubs in the Bay Area. This is a picture of a cannabis club in San Francisco. On the left is the exterior. That's the way that it looked with no signage. And on the right, I took a photo from the window the day after the DEA busted it. My study found that most of the cannabis clubs in the Bay Area emit a furtive, surreptitious presence, often with locked gate, mirrored windows, and ambiguous signage, if any signage at all, like this dispensary has none. Although there exists a legal ambiguity, that's why they try to hide, because of the legal ambiguity, hiding in plain view offers no real protection from governmental or community hassles, obvious by this one, and I believe does more harm than good to the collective social consciousness. There's the map. So this is a map of the San Francisco dispensaries, and they're very concentrated, as you can see, in areas that I call zones of transition. They're areas that are typically supportive of social and economic experiments. I don't know if you know of San Francisco very well, but there aren't any in the upper-class neighborhoods. There's none in the Marina. There aren't any in Pacific Heights. And I'd like to see a map that have green crosses all over. It shouldn't just be relegated to certain neighborhoods that tolerate the behavior. I believe they should be open, welcoming spaces that every neighborhood would want them because they're part of the community. I believe that by hiding, clubs contribute to the negative connotation of cannabis use. Though I know that many clubs do offer a safe, comfortable, and communal space for palliative self-care, from the exterior, it is impossible to know this. The discreet frontages draw attention from curious outsiders and often criticism from uninformed neighbors. One may say that if I am not a medical marijuana patient, perhaps I have no business knowing what goes on inside the sanctuaries. But I disagree. These facilities are part of our urban fabric. They can't hide, nor should they be relegated to the fringe or be forced into restrictive, ambiguous representations of the business being conducted. This is a shop in the Lower Haight that is called the Vapor Room, and it's the most elaborately painted locked gate of all of them. Of the 30 that I actually analyzed in San Francisco, 29 of the 30 have locked gates. The existence of medical marijuana dispensaries is an important tool for the normalization of cannabis collectively. At the core is the importance for patients to get their medicine, but it is better for all of society for the spaces to be open, welcoming places of health and healing, and to be integrated and accepted by the community. We have an incredible opportunity to acclimate the public to cannabis being a common, accepted part of our culture. A majority of Californians want marijuana accessible and available. While the legal tide is flowing in favor of medicinal marijuana, let's ride that tidal wave together, working with club owners, patients, communities, and governments to create a legitimate and visible cannabis landscape. Often, the most visible signage incorporate medicinal imagery. And I believe that the attempts to combine the medicinal imagery with pot symbols will help do this. Put pot out into the public. Let them be pot leaves. Let them be embedded with green crosses. These are different signs from different dispensaries that have much, much more overt signage, but they're typically with medical, so it makes them feel a little safer, I believe. Versus a dispensary like this that has no signage whatsoever. These are typically identified by their address alone. You can see that 722 has a circle around it. So this address is known as 722 Columbus Avenue. This is the Green Cross, and I included this in my study because the Green Cross was a facility that was trying to embed itself more into the community. This is the block that it was in, and it actually got a license before it opened up. And because it had a license, it could have something revoked. It did have its license revoked because of a nuisance. It had too much foot traffic. And this factors into my belief that we have to be really careful with the regulations. We all need to be responsible with the regulations, not just patients, not just owners, but us as a community, because they can seriously impact the natural progression of these into our environment, as I will show you from Amsterdam, where in one very small area, there's over 100 coffee shops, and they can compete, and they can be open, and they're much safer when there's more of them versus being relegated 1,000 feet away from each other, where they then have to have security guards to be safe. So what I say is one of the most damaging regulations is that of a number of caps on dispensaries. Capping numbers of cannabis spaces restricts the natural progression of what geographer Dr. Adrian Jensen termed atmospheric differentiation. This is just a still from the old website from Green Cross that shows that, you know, on the website they can be a little more open about what they're doing, which is selling cannabis, but outside it's a little bit more ambiguous. So we'll just go a little stroll through Amsterdam. And it's important to note that atmospheric differentiation is part of cannabis culture. We want to have spaces that reflect personal taste, ambiance, music, maybe the fellow clientele. In the center, the Siberia is a coffee shop that is in one of the nicer canal districts, kind of upper middle class area. This is just a brief synopsis of the Dutch coevolution with cannabis. As most of you may know this, so I'll just go through it quickly. In 1976 is when the separation between soft drugs and hard drugs was actually put into the legal system. Of course, it only decriminalized personal use, no qualification for how cannabis was to be acquired. So therefore, unlicensed coffee shops emerged. In 1980, there were only 9 coffee shops. And according to Dr. Jensen, he said that they were situated in unattractive buildings in the localities which provide space for all sorts of social, economic, and cultural experiments. This is tracking like what's happening in San Francisco by the map I showed you earlier. Tolerance of the sales leads to proliferation, and then the needs for regulation because there seems like there's too many and now it's time to license them. And as is in San Francisco, I find, too, the informal practices are adopted as codified regulations. Oh, you guys are running it pretty well, so we'll turn what you're doing already because you figured out safe ways to run your business into law. Except we want to have a nuisance clause added, which is a qualitative measure, not quantitative, qualitative, that says you're now bugging something, someone, somehow, and we're going to shut you down. So this is the one code I believe we need to really be careful with. And now there's over 200 shops in Amsterdam, in all different neighborhoods, high-end shopping districts, tourist areas, residential areas, etc. This is a map of the very center district of Amsterdam. The map on the left, the red is what's highlighted. It's enlarged on the right. It's an area that's about half a mile wide and not even a mile long. And there's 119 coffee shops in this very small area. And in that area, they're able to remain profitable. They can account for large numbers and tremendous variety of coffee shops because of this atmospheric differentiation that needs to remain. For example, in Berkeley, there's only 3 cannabis clubs allowed, and they need to be 1,000 feet away from each other. That doesn't give people a different variety, different places to go to ingest. Or, as Amanda has shown you, there's a lot of different services being offered, and I think that a lot of more clubs need to exist in order to give everybody the atmosphere that they need. This is the coffee shop license that's in every window. And so there's no wondering where you can buy cannabis and where you can use cannabis in a public recreation space. And I love the Dutch because there's also the Visa sign. So you can use your Visa there because it's part of the culture. It's part of capitalism. This is the Paradox. It's a tucked away little neighborhood spot. I like that the door is wide open and there's a bench outside if you'd rather sit outside, come in, stay out, whatever you want to do. This shows the interior. I noticed that every coffee shop that I analyzed in Amsterdam had bar seating and cafe seating, and many of them had big, bright, open windows, which is in serious contrast to what is in the Bay Area. This is the Cashmere Lounge, also a neighborhood highly popularized by locals, and it has many different varieties of seating, table seating, floor seating. There's even a dance floor for nighttime use. And to show you how embedded it is in the neighborhood, this is the street that it's on, and there's actually 2 coffee shops across the street. So they're very densely concentrated, and they're embedded into the urban fabric. And this is to show that, really, you can't have too dense of a concentration of cannabis spaces. In this one small block, 3 of the 4 spaces are coffee shops. One appeals to people who want to listen to rock music while they're getting stoned. One is the Bulldog, which appeals to a lot of tourists that want kind of a cleaner, you know, more sterile environment. And then the end is the Doors. And you can sit outside in 2 of the 3 of them. And I say that with economic success comes power and persistence to affect society, and is evidenced by Henk de Vries' large commercial chain of coffee shops, the Bulldog, if any of you are familiar with this. The Bulldog Palace here is a hotel, a gift shop, and a restaurant, in addition to being a coffee shop, and is in the center of the Liegeplein, Tours Square. And this particular location is in a former police station. And the authorities tried to get him out because they felt that it was really an insulting move. But Henk has enough economic and political power now, based on cannabis consumption and cannabis sales, that he could not be moved out, so he's still in this very prime location. So I say that the Netherlands is no longer alone in thinking that cannabis policy is characterized by the great discrepancy between formal prohibition and informal acceptance. The public is entitled to legislation that is explicit and legislation that is enforced. With regulations comes legitimation. In San Francisco, the shape and the landscape is going to change because of regulations. There are some that are going to close. There are some that are just going to go further underground. There are going to be collectives that they believe can operate still legally within the law and not get the licensing, which will also be okay. But there will be a handful that will merge integrated into the urban fabric, and all pot smokers, all people tolerant of cannabis and cannabis use will be better for there being more obvious, more visible space. I wanted to include this one that I think is a really great model. It's Richard Lee's coffee shop SR71. It is a coffee shop and also a cafe. So if you don't have a medical marijuana card, you can go in and buy coffee. and they just keep the sales of the cannabis for medicinal use separate. And I think it's a great way to have them open, visible spaces. Why not let all of them be places we can go get yoga and maybe play bingo, and you can only purchase if you're a patient, but you can actually hang out. If you have friends that are sick, you need to help them get there. Don't have to be official caregiver, but let them be more integrated with all of us. And I just wanted to put up one quick map. Sorry, there's a lot of text, so don't try to read it all because I'm going to whip it before you can see it all. This is a map of the 219 current cannabis dispensaries that I got from the Cal Normal site. And they're everywhere. This is by county. The cities, the urban centers, typically have a lot more. But they're in some really tiny communities, too. There's 219 total, from Ukiah to Chico, Guerneville, Tulare. Yes, even Weed, California has some. We're glad to know. And of all the communities that have them, 24 so far have established regulations, so there's still a lot more towns that are going to have to regulate, and so it's time to make sure the regulations protect patients, owners, and general pot smokers, and we need to work all together to make them spaces that are more open and visible. And in conclusion, I say landscape is a representation of our society. Taboos are socially constructed and are reproduced by specific practices in our landscape. By hiding, clubs contribute to the negative connotation of cannabis use. And I believe that integration is more powerful for the owners, for the patients, and for all of us. And with regulations comes legitimation. As government regulations condone clubs, perhaps a narrow but more visible landscape emerges. And most importantly, we need to be conscientious here in California. You know, as everyone has said so far today, California is a model for the U.S., and I believe work that's being done by Amanda is really important for people to see that they're really important spaces and that we need to let them be open and visible for all of us. Thank you.
That was graduate researcher Joan Madonna at the 2006 Normal Conference in San Francisco. We have links to more conference audio at normalaudiostash.com. Coming up for you next today, some great pod-safe music. This found at the IODA, the Independent Online Distribution Alliance. This is Zion Train with Zion High. Out the show today with one more track. We played a little bit of these guys last week as sort of background music for one of our segments. Wanted to give them full play. This is Causeway, Change in My Lifetime.
Some people really believe what they can be. Grandpa always said it would take some time to change the face of education. Now I see him saying, damn, I want to see a change in my lifetime. I want to see a change in my lifetime. His way the only way, and I ain't saying that it's all just been bad. We shed some light on black and white, cross some lines to say that these are signs. Well, I know that the change is slow, and I want to see a change in my lifetime. I want to see a change in my lifetime. I want to see a change in my lifetime.
Causeway with Change in My Lifetime. We have links to them at normalaudiostash.com. That was Pod Safe Music, found up at podshow.com. Tune in tomorrow on Normal's Daily Audio Stash. We'll hear from the crew and staff out at the Block Hotel in Lake Tahoe, California. They're up on the G4 network if you want to see what these guys have to do for a day job out there. We'll talk with the Block guys tomorrow on Normal's Daily Audio Stash.
listening to Normal's Daily Audio Stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Make sure you visit our website at normalaudiostash.com. That's normalaudiostash.com for more information about every day's show. I'm your host, Chris Goldstein. Thanks for listening today. See you at 4:20 tomorrow. Podcasting technology of Normal is made possible by Red Aphid Interactive Media. More information at redaphid.com.